Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program is brought to you by the Dairy Farm Families of Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. Did you know that today Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheese that win more awards than any other state or country? To learn more, visit eatwisconsincheese.com.
I'm Linda Palaccio, host of A Taste of the Past. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello and welcome to Cutting the Curd, broadcasting live on the Heritage Radio Network. This is your host, Greg Blaze. On the line, we have cheesemonger Najib Shuaf, who is the owner of Flora Artisanal Cheese in Charlottesville, Virginia. How are you doing today, Najib?
I'm doing great, Greg. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for being on the show. So how's everything going on in Charlottesville these days? Are you getting ready for the holidays?
We're already in full swing right now. Things are picking up, and we're ready to just rock it next week.
That's awesome, man. It's going to be really busy for all of us. I was wondering if you could tell our listeners just a little bit about yourself and also about your cheese shop, which is fairly new.
Absolutely, yeah. I've been a cheesemonger off and on for about 8 years. I started out actually on the farming side, working with pasture and then working with a herd of goats. From there, I actually needed a job in town, so I took my first job behind a cheese counter just for a lark, and within a week, I was hooked and knew this is what I wanted to do. And so I just kept plugging away at that, building up my knowledge, and about 2 years ago, decided I wanted to open my own shop, and we opened Flora Artisanal Cheese almost 15 months ago now.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
Are you from Charlottesville?
No, actually, I grew up in the D.C. area, lived in Charlottesville for a little bit, high school in Baltimore, then out to the West Coast, and was in Oregon for about 10 years. About 3 years ago, moved back to Charlottesville, which happens a lot with this town, pulls people back in, and just fell back in love and decided to put down roots.
That's fantastic. You said you have some experience working with dairy animals. Where did you get that experience?
That's actually here outside of Charlottesville. We have a local creamery called Caramont Farm. And I met the owner. We worked on a farm together, and she left to start her creamery. And I went along with her and sort of helped her out pre-revenue with her business.
That's pretty cool. And then after that, where'd you get your cheese chops down behind the counter?
It was almost entirely at Whole Foods. I was at the Whole Foods here in Charlottesville behind the cheese counter. Got the pleasure to work with Monger, who had put in a couple years at Cowgirl and really knew his stuff, and sort of showed me the way that how much there was to know about cheese. And so once he left, I decided to try and take on his mantle and step up and be the person to answer questions.
That's fantastic. I mean, it's always good to have people in the small community behind the counter, you know, just side by side, someone you trust and maybe even look up to in certain ways to just let you know you're on the right path.
Absolutely.
That's cool, man. So you knew you were going to open up a shop, you said, about 2 years ago? Maybe you could tell us a little bit about your shop and what it offers.
Yeah, absolutely. So I have a small cheese counter located inside of a coffee shop called Millie Joe. And basically the genesis of the shop was I'd moved back to Charlottesville. There were options to buy cheese, but no one was doing cut to order. And with the high price point that was being charged, it seemed like really a shame that people didn't have access to get fresh cheese right off the wheel. So I thought I would hang around and wait for someone to open a shop like that and try and manage it. And over a weekend, I started thinking about it more and more and thought, well, why the hell don't I do it? And so I started looking into what that would take and pulling some money together and get that going. So now we have a shop with about 70 different cheeses, mostly American, but healthy mix of European cheeses in as well.
That's pretty cool. Do you do a little charcuterie there and cheese plates? Can people eat in your shop and stuff like that?
We do. Since we're in the coffee shop, I do do quite a bit of cheese plate business during the day. We offer different salumis from Ollie, which is just down the road from us.
Yeah, I know those
then
guys.
We have a local whole animal butcher that does different terrines for me: head cheese, pate, lamb pate, those kinds of things.
Cool. I just wanted to ask you one more question just before
Please.
We get into our topic for today. You had an interesting quote I read about cheese being mysterious and you wanting to be the guy to explain people that mystery. And I quote, "Cheese was this mysterious thing that very few people knew a lot about, and I wanted to be that person," end quote. Do you feel like opening up your own shop and being a cheesemonger for this amount of time has gotten you closer to being able to be that guy, or are you that guy?
No, definitely not that guy yet, but it's got me on the road, and it's got me having conversations with people about cheese, about where it's from, how it's made, who's making it, why it's made that way, and that's why I got into this business, was really just to have those one-on-one conversations with people.
It's good. Cheese is a very interesting window through which to view the world, and it's a good way to meet people I've found in my time, too.
Absolutely.
So, well, thank you for that info, and if you guys are ever in Charlottesville, Virginia, you got to check out Najib and his awesome cheese shop. So today's episode is all about cheese hacks. Much like a life hack, which is a trick or shortcut or a novelty that makes life easier, a cheese hack is like a life hack but with cheese. And I was hoping if Najib, you could get us started off. We're gonna talk about a couple of interesting hacks in the world of cheese. And maybe, Najib, you can get us into our first one.
Absolutely. So the first hack I actually learned as a cheesemonger was about Parmesan rinds. You buy a piece of Parmesan, you grate it down as far as you can, trying to get every penny out of it, and then you're left with this hard rind. No one ever really knows what to do with it. But if you hold on to them and save them up, or even a lot of shops, including mine, you can purchase just the Parmesan rinds that have been trimmed away from the sellable pieces. And they are like magic in soups and broths.
Absolutely.
Yeah, just a handful of Parmesan rinds in any sort of soup just delivers this umami bomb. It makes it so rich and savory. And even more than just adding it to soup, I a lot of times like to use Parmesan as the main component in a broth, in something like a Parmesan brodo, which is really easy to make and will just blow people's minds.
So do you trim off the rinds for people if they ask you to?
I will if they ask me to, but I always follow up with letting them know what is available to them and how they can use it.
Yeah, we sell the rinds too. It's probably one of our biggest bargains at Eataly, and actually one of the most sought after items. I sell the rinds for like $2 a pound. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
And people can't believe it, but it's funny. It's always the little old ladies that know to come and ask me for them. I don't know if that's the same with you, but I always find it makes a real difference to me to sell that because it is an ingredient, and I feel really bad when I throw away anything, especially a part of the cheese that's usable. So it makes me feel really good that hack is out there, or at least some people have knowledge of it.
Absolutely. We try to get as little waste as possible, not just from an economic point of view, but, I mean, just as much work went into making the rinds as went into making the rest of the cheese, and you want to honor what the producers have done.
What are your customers' opinions on the rinds of the cheeses? Do they buy in?
It varies. So the biggest complaint I get with using the Parmesan rinds, like say in a soup or a broth, is people feel like it doesn't make a difference, and oftentimes they're just not using enough. But the people who do know, they know for sure, and I don't have rinds sit around for very long because people are coming in to buy it up right away.
Yeah, I get that too. I get people that say that that's just hooey, and then they can't taste it in there. But if you're just dropping in like an eighth of a pound worth of cheese into a giant bowl of soup, of course you're not going to taste it. But I mean, if you bulk it up, you definitely get there. And it also brings us into, for me, we don't pre-grate any cheese at Eataly, or unless we're cutting Parmigiano and we accidentally miscut the wheel, which we rarely ever do, but sometimes the wheels are cold and they brittle sometimes, so we'll grate a little bit ahead of time, but we pick out your cheese and bring it back, and we weigh it up with the rind on there, and we trim off the rind and then we grate it. I always just throw the rinds back into their container. And it's interesting because I get people who, like, sort of, they sort of, some customers, they sort of complain on me at that. Like, I'm trying to, you know, put a quarter on the scale or something like that. And I'm like, no, I'm just giving you, like, you know, the end of your cheese, which in times of need you can completely use.
I mean, if you're hard up, you can even throw that into a food processor and grate it up just like you would the rest of the cheese.
And maybe you can also talk about another thing, you know, what you can do with the rinds, the puffed Parmigiano rinds.
Yeah, absolutely. So I actually just learned about this last week, in fact. But if you take the ends of the cheese, a little bit of cheese, a little bit of rind left at the end, cut it into, you know, pretty small pieces, throw it on a plate, throw it in the microwave, and they puff up so cool. They make the most amazing Cheetos you've ever had.
That's weird. I always think of like a microwave as like this tool of like instant death. I don't know why. I'm afraid it's like there's two things I tell people to keep their cheese away from, like the freezer and the microwave. However, you know, I've been known to like cook up like horrible microwavable pizzas that have something that's called cheese on them. But I bet you these, and I've never done this. I just learned about this about a week ago as well. I bet you can taste the difference in that, the little puffy rinds. They're probably good with a cocktail or something like that.
It'd be great. Actually, what I did this weekend when I learned about it, decided to go home and try it, and just did a little balsamic reduction and drizzled that over it, and it tasted amazing.
That's cool, man. And well, those are a couple of interesting hacks that we can talk about. And that's going to lead me perfectly to cheese hack number three, which is making cheese crisps in the microwave, a little bit different than taking the rinds. So last week I read an article about microwaved cheese crisps becoming a trending topic on social media in Japan after a food personality showed them how to do it. The host even declared it would go great with beer, which I'm sure it would. The TV program recommended 90 seconds on high in the microwave on a baking sheet. And I saw some of these like sort of wacky pictures people posted, and it seems lots of folks tried variations on it. Some used processed cheese, which seemed to like puff up like the Cheeto that you were just talking about, as opposed to regular cheese, which turned crispy. And it was very odd-looking pictures. Like, it looked definitely like drug abuse or something like that on there. This one guy microwaved it for 9 whole minutes and ended up with what was essentially cheese toast. So, Najib, have you ever tried microwaving cheese into crisps, making Lazy Man Parmigiano crisps?
You know, I haven't. Sort of like you, I try to keep cheese away from the microwave, but with these new options, I might have to do some experimentation of my own.
I mean... We had people, some of the pictures I saw, they had wrapped the cheese in nori, which I thought would be too salty, but I don't know. I mean, this was an interesting hack for me, but I just read about it, but I haven't tried it yet. Like I said, I stay away from my microwave as much as I can, even though I need it sometimes.
I understand, but it seems like a really great option because it's going to pop up like a crisp, like a cracker or something, and if you're trying to cut weight or some other low carb diet, you've basically got protein in almost carbohydrate form.
Yeah, I guess I would be forced to agree with you there. But maybe you can tell us about our next and fourth cheese hack.
Yeah, this is when we start delving into this sort of magical science and sodium citrate, which is a really cool. It's a salt from citric acid that you find in any sort of citrus fruit, and it's a salt that emulsifies.
Yeah.
And so, if you've ever tried to make a queso dip,
the texture never comes out.
A local restaurant improved their queso, and the thing we kept coming back to was Velveeta processed cheese is really the only cheese out there that functions and allows the dip to be sort of oozy without separating until I discovered sodium citrate. And you can sprinkle sodium citrate into either water or beer over medium heat, and you can take whatever cheese you want, cheddar that would normally be sort of brittle and separate into an oily mess if you try to heat it up. With the addition of the sodium citrate, the protein bonds stretch out, and so you can make a nice oozy nacho covering with any cheese that you want.
That's pretty awesome because, I mean, that texture is just, It's so horrible and so wrong, yet I crave it all. I crave it all the time. You know what
and
I mean?
And there's no cheese professional out there that doesn't.
And they'd be a liar if they said that they didn't, because there's nothing like the numbing, glossy texture of movie nacho cheese. That also works for mac and cheese too. I hear, which is good. I like to make my mac and cheese from scratch, and I'll make a bechamel, you know, with like a ton of Comté or Gruyere.
Uh-huh.
But because I get good prices on it, you know, my mac and cheese isn't like $80, which it would be if you took like a 6-pound block of, you know, of Gruyere or whatever and melted it down into that. And the texture never really gets to be the same as what I want, which is unfortunately what I crave, is that glossy sort of movie nacho texture.
It's just such a satisfying feeling.
It is. It is a satisfying feeling. That's great. And so that's a good cheese hack for everybody to know. And our fifth cheese hack is another one, but an ancient one, like our first Parmigiano one. It's a tradition-based. It's what the French call fromage fort. And it answers the question of what to do with all those little bits of leftover cheese after you serve a large cheese plate, or if you run a cheese shop, just little bits of unusable cheese. You know, we'd all like to think we cut the cheese perfectly every time, but we don't, and we always have little ugly oblong pieces of cheese, and as cheesemongers, we should be loath to throw any cheese away ever unless it's absolutely been, you know, dropped in kerosene or something like that. And so what you do is you take all of those little bits of cheese and you blend them together with white wine and garlic and herbs in like a big mason jar or a pot until it becomes a rich spread and it's really, really strong. Have you ever made anything like that?
Fromage fort is one of my favorite things in the world, both as a snack and then especially once I owned my own cheese shop and was trying to keep spoilage down.
Totally.
It's like magic. I describe it as turning trash into gold. And I think especially good at home because, again, I'm one of those people that I've constantly got 5, 6, 7 different kinds of cheese in my fridge that we get down to the end and we don't finish. It goes into a bag and I would either forget about it and throw it away, but now that I have fromage fort, throw it in the food processor, just like you're saying, and it is so rich and so strong. It makes my favorite breakfast, in fact, is a cup of coffee with some toast and fromage fort.
Damn, you got to brush your teeth after a breakfast like that, my friend. My goodness. Do your customers, you ever sell it to them? Oh, I think I lost Najib. But that's okay. He'll be back in a moment. I remember a time when I made some fromage fort over at Dean and DeLuca and sold it over a period of a year. So we're going to take a little bit of a break here on Cutting the Curd. But when we come back, we'll have Najib and some more cheese hacks for you. Take care.
The Dairy Farm Families of Wisconsin and the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board are proud to underwrite Cutting the Curd on heritageradionetwork.org. Wisconsin cheeses have an illustrious heritage of more than 170 years of quality and craftsmanship. During this long and rich history, the art and science of cheesemaking have been captured in time-honored traditions that produce cheese varieties of unsurpassed excellence. Today, Wisconsin produces more than 600 varieties, types, and styles of American, international style, and original cheeses that win more awards than any other state or country. To learn more, visit www.eatwisconsincheese.com.
Hey, my name is Betsy Andrews, executive editor of Savera Magazine, and I am hanging out at the coolest, most delicious place in the world, heritageradionetwork.org.
Welcome back to Cutting the Curd. I have Najib of Flora Artisanal Cheese on the line from Charlottesville, Virginia. Welcome back, Najib.
Thank you very much.
And today we're talking about cheese hacks. Again, life hacks are simple tricks to make your life easier or turn everyday objects into solutions or an everyday problem for an everyday problem. A cheese hack is like a life hack about cheese. Well, that is our next cheese hack, and it's inspired by an NPR article I recently read about making faux cheddar in an hour, which I thought was crazy, but it's based on a recipe by Claudia Lucero, who runs Urban Cheesecraft out of Portland, Oregon, in her book 1 Hour Cheese. Basically, she makes a fresh-style pressed cheese to which she adds spices like paprika and turmeric and smoked sea salt to make the cheese seem more mature than it is and give the greater depth of flavor more quickly. What do you think about this hack?
I'm fascinated by it. 1 hour cheese sounds like it's too good to be true, but I would be interested to try it, especially with the herbs added, give it a really nice smoky flavor to it.
I suppose this could be a really helpful thing for someone that was running a restaurant, I guess, you know, if you wanted to give someone the illusion. She calls this, I think, smoky cheater.
Yeah.
which is an awesome name.
It really is.
But I think it would be helpful if you were, you know, I guess running a restaurant. I would like to try it too. I think that's an interesting hack. I don't know in so far as much as it'd be something that I would ever do for myself, but you never know. I'm a terrible scientist. I always say this. So I think I would try to do it, and I would end up with some sort of inedible goo or like rock hard paste. But
I mean, it sounded like it took her a few tries to get it right.
Yeah, it seemed it. But
yeah.
Check that out, Smoky Cheater. And maybe, Najib, you can introduce our next cheese hack.
Yeah, this is for the fat boy in me. It is using mayo instead of butter for your grilled cheeses.
Sounds good.
And being down in the South, this is actually something I'm very, very familiar with. A lot of people around here grew up doing it. We've got wonderful Duke's mayo, which is absolutely fantastic. If you ever come across it, snatch it up.
That's the pimento cheese mayo.
The beauty of using mayo instead of butter for your grilled cheese is, one, I always forget to leave the butter out. I even have a beautiful butter bell, but I leave the butter in the fridge, and I go to make grilled cheese, and it's, you know, splitting all over the place.
Yeah.
But with mayo, pull it out, spreads right on, and then it solves the, you know, the biggest issue with grilled cheese, which is how to get the cheese melted inside without burning the outside. You know, some people spend months trying to figure out the right pan, the right cover to use to make sure everything cooks evenly without burning it. But with mayo, because it has a higher smoking point than butter, you're able to just go low and slow without any issues of blackening, and it comes perfectly crisp because the oil and the egg and the mayonnaise crisp up perfectly, and you will have the best grilled cheese you've had every single time.
That's pretty good. It's important to have a good grilled cheese, my friend, in our profession.
It's what we
you know?
Live for.
It is. I didn't mean to interrupt you before, but the Duke's mayo I am familiar with. I've been told by my friends from the South that is literally the only mayo to use while making pimento cheese.
It's the only mayo to use ever. People come at me with that Hellman's nonsense, but Duke's every day.
That's pretty cool. I mean, sometimes you can grill both sides of the bread. I've tried. I have never made a grilled cheese sandwich with mayo, but I definitely, you know, after this, I think I'm going to try because it just sounds fattening and amazing.
You'll never go back, I promise you.
I'll give you listeners an update on my mayo grilled cheese status later on in the season. So those are good hacks for people that are or are not cheesemongers. Anybody can do the things that we've talked about, the first five or six hacks that we've mentioned. But now I wanted to to ask you about some hacks for cheesemongers. You know, are there some things in your shop that you just do in order to creatively solve a cheese problem that's, you know, using the environment around you?
You know, we've already mentioned it, but I think it's so important. Fromage Fort is your friend. You should almost never have spoilage. So go back to that and try that. But then there's some other great hacks. if you've got washed rind cheeses that are drying out, just seem to be suffering a little bit, I will do about 5 or 6 percent brine solution, and just give it a little bathe to sort of poof it up and bring it back to life. Make sure that it is at its highest quality, because that's our job as cheesemongers, is to present the cheese as the cheesemaker intended.
Absolutely. For washed rind cheeses, we've also been able to revive them by using moist paper towels. It's very interesting.
Yeah,
underneath the plastic wrap, moist paper towels, if you've got any of them laying around, and maybe most cheesemongers know this, but if you don't, and if you can't whip up your own brine solution, a paper towel underneath the plastic will definitely help you out. And a couple of other good ones that I know of, we always, white vinegar is great for getting sort of like black and odd, like cat hair surface molds off of firm cheeses. I don't know if you've ever done that. I take a little rag and just sort of brush. Sometimes I sell a lot of cheeses from Italy that have been brushed in tomato paste and oil, from Pecorino, and the Pecorino Rossellino being one of them. And a little bit of vinegar will take off some of the surface mold that just jumps around, because not all of us are lucky enough to import cheese directly from the source. We don't have our own cheese cave, so our cheese lives with other cheese in a big warehouse sometimes. And this sort of it tames down those exterior rinds. And you did mention fromage fort, which is actually a great thing. And another thing, if you don't want to make a big brandied cheese mush, which you should, but if you don't, oil also revives old cheeses. Placing cheeses in oil with herbs, especially if you have older goat cheeses lying around. We've always made marinated chev. I think for every year, in every cheese shop I've ever worked in, an easy cheese hack is just marinating older goat cheeses and put a little rosemary or thyme and herbs in there. Also works. And then the boxes, the little goat cheese boxes that you get, the little make really great tiny cheese caves. So if you have young croton that come in and you want to sort of fluff up the geotrichum, you know, and make them all brainy so people love them, they look kind of sexy, you take the goat cheese box and sort of cover it in plastic, you know, and you make sort of a tiny little cheese cave in there where it's a little bit more moist, and it really works. It's odd, and it's worked at every cheese shop I've ever done. Have you ever done anything like that?
That's such a great idea. I've never used the cheese boxes, but I did spend an afternoon drilling holes in a bunch of Cambros to essentially get the same effect, and just packed the inside with wet paper towels and sponge to keep the humidity up, and would try and fluff up some of the bloomies that way. And another great hack, I don't run into it here at my shop, but when I was at a much larger store where we had multiple wheels of Parmesan and other Grana cheeses, sometimes they'd be sitting out and they'd develop some cracking in the rind,
yeah,
and a little bit of shortening or lard, just to seal that up and keep it a little bit fresher until you're ready to crack it.
That's really good.
Works really well for us.
And lard is good. I mean, I'd often rub it on my own skin, you know, when I get cracks on there. It really helps me out.
How you keep staying so young, Greg.
No, but seriously, make a little cave. It'll work. And then also, one of the easiest ones that maybe everybody knows is whenever you're trying to build a nice cheese display, the exterior boxes, and you get all these nice wooden boxes that cheese come in, they often make a really nice riser, you know, so they help you build displays really easily. Cheeses, I love the little wooden boxes, which I feel like sometimes they're going away, but the little ones from the Loire River Valley, or sometimes if you buy cheese from Capriole, they still use those tiny little wooden handmade boxes, which are, to me, just one of the best hacks of being a cheesemonger, is you get to collect those boxes, which help you store things in your home or apartment, help you store signed cards and pins and all sorts of things in your shop, and they also help prop up your cheese underneath your display. And then one of our producers gave me a great cheese hack that I've never used, but you know, if you, let's say you don't have any cheese wire in your shop, do you use wires, by the way?
I use wires, like handheld butter wires, and a larger actual cheese wire.
I don't really care for the machines. I never have. I don't know why. I don't understand. It's never seen. I like to play with the knives, but the wires I'm less familiar with. But let's say you snap a wire, or you only have one wire, or something like that happens. Unwaxed dental floss will actually work, which is
really
which I was shocked, but I tried it, and it actually works really, really well. I like it.
I'm definitely gonna remember that. We have time for another hack, and this is, again, pretty simple, and a lot of people would know it, but I've run into this in other shops where people are opening up a cheese, especially big Alpine-style cheeses, give it a whiff, and that ammonia knocks them over.
Sure.
And they are saying that, you know, the cheese is bad, let's toss it. Let it blow off. Give it a little time to sort of reassert itself, and if it's still smelling really, really strongly like ammonia, especially the smaller guys, it's probably gone, but always give it a chance before you're ready to do something else with it.
No, that's actually great. Sometimes the rinds get a little gassy, mm-hmm. you know, and they've eaten up a lot of the oxygen in the boxes that they come in. And it's cheeses that are under plastic. Plastic is such a plastic wrap is such a necessary evil in our business. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And a lot of times that's just the way things get transported. But yeah, that's a great tip and hack. Give it a little time to burn that off. You know, in the air. That's fantastic. Well, I wanted to to thank you for coming on today, Najee.
My pleasure. It's so much fun.
And time flies. So we've done some good work today. We've given people a half dozen or so hacks that they can use in their everyday life, and also taking a look at some easy cheese hacks in the shop that you can use. And lastly, before we sign off, I wanted to mention an interesting opportunity to our listeners who may be cheesemakers or aspiring cheesemakers out there. The folks at Consider Bardwell, and Najib, you and I know them well.
Very well.
They're a nationally known creamery and dairy, in West Paulette, Vermont. They're looking for cheesemakers. And immediately they are looking for cheesemakers, focusing in cheesemaking, creamery cleaning, cave work, and affinage. Got to have a flexible schedule and know your HACCP plan, you know, and be a dedicated person. But it's a full-time salaried position with paid vacations. They'll even put you up temporary housing during your relocation. And if you're interested in that, you should contact Angela Miller, Angela at ConsiderBardwellFarm.com. So I want to say thanks again, Najib, for coming on. We'll have you back in the future. And thanks to everybody for listening to Cutting the Curd. We'll be back next week. Take care.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awele, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.